And we're holding on to Zion Omer Bey's last words. So, we've learned in the Mishnah that you have a case where you have ground floor and second floor. Primarily, we're talking about, as Rashi had said, where the second floor, tenant is only renting rather than that he owns it. So now if the second story sags or breaks through or whatever in a certain amount, then now the balabais, the ground floor owner, has to fix it. And if he doesn't, then we said the one who lives on the second floor is allowed to live downstairs until it gets fixed. And we established in the Gemara that the case is specifically where he told him that I'm renting you this second floor apartment, which is above this ground floor, where in effect then he was meshabed the ground floor to the second floor. So therefore now when he's not fixing the second floor so that it's livable, then he has a right to say, well, then I'm going to exercise my shibud and live in the house downstairs. Well, the Gemara says, boy, Rab Abba Bar Memel. So now Rab Abba Bar Memel has a question in that. When he's going to be living there, Levade Hudar Kedemi Ikra, do we say he gets to live there alone like he was when he was upstairs? And that would mean that would mean the landlord downstairs actually has to move out until he fixes the place. Or maybe both of them get to live there. They live there together. Because after all, the landlord can tell him, look, I never rented it to you on with the understanding that I would have to be forced out of my own house. Mela, that I have to share the house with you, fine. You know, I said it in such a way that made a shit, that made that my house is meshubad to your second floor, but not to the extent where I would be forced out of my house.
Even the cheap landlord.
So that's one part. So that's the first question. Im tim tzaloyma shnehem darin boy. If you're going to say that the din is, you're right, that second possibility, and therefore both of them have to be allowed to live in there. And as usual, the Rishonim have a rule, which already goes back to the Gaonim, that when the Gemara says im tim tzaloyma on a question, means we're going to be following that possibility. So therefore, the halacha is, in fact, that both of them live there. Well then, Rabbi Abba Bar Memel continues. Kshum shtamish. What about now when this former second floor tenant, who's now temporarily living on the ground floor, when he's using the house, derech psachim mishtamish or derech gagin mishtamish, would he have to, when he's going in and out of the house, would we say that he can go in the normal way through the normal door of the house, or maybe he has to go in by way of the second floor? After all, how was he doing when he lived on the second floor? He was going to the stairs upstairs. And then he was going to his apartment. Now, maybe we say he doesn't have rights to the front door and like to the front door / foyer area of the downstairs apartment. That wasn't meshubad to him to begin with. So maybe therefore every time he wants to go to that downstairs apartment, he has to go upstairs and then use the stairs inside, like the back stairs or whatever, to go downstairs. So does he have to do that, or can he just go in derech psachim through the regular front door? Me, Omar, can the landlord say, kidim ikra, look, at most you're going to be using my house and you're going to be sharing my house with me until I fix the ceiling between us, but after all, it should be no more so than it was originally. Mama ikra derech gagin, hashtanami derech gagin. Before, you always went up to your apartment by means of your stairs outside of my apartment. Now you have to do the same kind of thing. Or maybe the soicher, maybe the tenant can answer back, you know what, aliyah kabili aloy, aliyah v'yirid aloy kabili aloy. To begin with, when I rented the place, I was willing to go upstairs, and then I'm in my apartment. I never signed up for the lease over here on the understanding that I'm going to have to go upstairs and then downstairs, which you're suggesting that I should have to do. So therefore I should be able to use the front door. Now, the Marshal brings up a point. Isn't this a case of Koifin al Midat Sidoim? What is the Balabais? What is the landlord downstairs lose by having this tenant use the front door? So why should he require the guy to go upstairs and then back downstairs? So the Marshal answers that the landlord can say, listen, you know, if you're going to go through my front door, it comes out you're not using the second floor at all. So then the whole point is, you find the second floor is not completely usable because it's not livable because part of its floor has sagged or collapsed or whatever. But still, if you're going to be, at least if you're using that second floor and then you're going down to my apartment through there, then at least, so sometimes you're there, you'll do a little of your things there. You'll do some of, once you go upstairs there, you're probably not going to come down right away. You'll at least go in your apartment, you'll do a few things, and then you'll come down to mine, and that way at least you're not on top of me all the time. So is that a valid argument? So if you're going to answer that, yes, the second floor tenant has the right to say that I never accepted on myself to go up and down. Therefore, he can say it doesn't matter. Yes, I'm going to be on top of you as long as we're sharing the apartment downstairs here. But I have every right to do that. I'm not obligated to go upstairs in order to go downstairs. So I can use your front door. And again, since there's an imkin saloymar, it means that is in fact the halacha. Then we have to ask, here's another question. Shtei aliyas zu al gav zu. What if you have two upper floors? What if you have, it's a three-story building? So now what would be the din if one of those apartments the floor sags or collapses? Now, let's consider. If Chisel Yona, now, if it's the third floor that's collapsing, where the floor is collapsing, fine. Nochis v'dor b'tachtona, then fine, no question that this tenant now has the right to go and move down to the second. But we have to ask, if Chistachtona, what about if he was living on the second floor, and its floor is collapsing, Maul Mislak v'gamri v'el Yona, do we say that the landlord has the right to say, you don't come live downstairs and share my apartment on the ground floor, go up and live on the third floor for now, until I fix it. Mi aminin, do we say to Omalei that the landlord can say, look, shame aliyah kabilas aloch, you accepted on yourself, you're going to live on an upper floor and that you're going to have to go upstairs in order to get to your apartment. So it doesn't matter as far as I'm concerned whether it's one flight of stairs or two that you have to climb. Or maybe we can say, the seller only can say, I only accepted on myself. I rented an apartment where there's only one flight of stairs up. Shtei aliyas, like kabil alei, I never accepted on myself to go up two flights of stairs, and therefore, no, you can't force me to go all the way up to the third floor. Rather, I should be able to live on the ground floor with you. Now, Tosfos says that we have to be talking about it. So again, what exactly were the terms of the lease? As we discussed in the Gemara before, if he just says to him, I'm renting you this aliyah, then once it's unavailable, then tough luck, it's unavailable. I rented you this aliyah, and now it's not available. And if he says that I'm renting you this aliyah that's under this aliyah, then of course he's going to be able to live in the upstairs one. And if he says, I'll gabe bayis zeh, then of course he can go into the house. So Tosfos says, yeah, we're talking about, he said, shal gabe bayis zeh. He said, I'm renting you the second floor, which is on top of this first floor. The question is, the third floor is also, maybe the third floor is also included in the category of bayis. So we can say, in other words, maybe, so the main house is the first floor, but nevertheless, the third floor is still included, and therefore he can say, therefore the landlord can say, look, I understand you have a shibud on this place, fine, so you can exercise your shibud by living on the third floor. Or maybe not, maybe he could say, I'm entitled to exercise my shibud only by going to the ground floor.
It's all presupposed that he feels it's safe enough to stay living there.
No, so what we're talking about again is there's a three-story house. Yeah, we're talking about the ground floor. Yeah,
if the floor is collapsing on the second floor, don't send me to the third floor. That might be even worse.
No, well, that's if you have reason to show it's worse, then that's different. But no, we're talking about that here. When we said ifris, we can mean that, we talked about yesterday. It can mean that the floor is sagging. It's on a slant now. Or it can mean that
where it was dangerous.
Yeah, basically, but where it's inconvenient, or you can have where an actual hole developed in it, where we said we learned in the Gemara yesterday, Rav had said that it would only be if most of the floor collapses or sags in, and Shmuel says it's enough 4x4 tefachim. Anyway, the point is that, yeah. So in this case, no. So we're talking about, let's say, the floor of the third story is fine and dandy. There's no danger in living there, and there's no hassle in living there in terms of that you have all of your things in one apartment, but you're climbing up two flights of stairs where before it was only one. So can the landlord force him to do that or not? So the Gemara says on that last question, take. So as usual, it'll be one of these Hamotzi Mechavel of Araya things. The Mishnah had said, Rabbi Yossi Omer, tatachta noisin as a tikra fuller. Rabbi Yossi had said that as far as this, now you Tanakama are saying that it's the Balabias' responsibility to fix the ceiling of the first floor, which is the floor of the second floor. So we said, if he doesn't do it, then the Baal Haliyah, we said the tenant in the second apartment, and then the second floor apartment is entitled to come live downstairs. Now, Rabbi Yossi had said that it depends. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Tachton, no sinus, a tikra chola. Rabbi Yossi had said the bottom floor, the guy on the bottom floor is required to provide the tikra, the roof, the actual ceiling beams themselves. But the upper floor guy is responsible for the maziva. We're going to define in the Gemara now what maziva is, but it means on the face of it, maziva means the plaster that's used to hold everything together. So Rabbi Yossi had said that it's a joint effort over here. So the Gemara says, "My tikra." What do we mean by the word tikra over here? What exactly defines the tikra versus the maziva? Rabbi Yossi b'chanina oima kinim usnoin. Rabbi Yossi Bachanina says it means you have kinim, you have kinim usnoim, which means thin pieces of wood that are woven together to make a kind of mat. So in other words, you have like this, there are beams that hold up the second floor, there are beams that hold up the floor of the second floor. Above them you put a flooring, and Rabbi Yossi Bachanina is understanding that the tikra includes that first layer of flooring, which would include, in other words, the mat that then you pour clay or concrete or what have you on it, which is the maziva to make a smooth floor. So Rabbi Yossi Bachanina says that it means that the tikra includes those things. Vastini, Omer of Shimon ben Lakish, Vastini, which Rashi says is the name of Talmud Chacham, says the name of Rish Lakish, a different definition, Levachim, that the tikra includes flat boards. You have a wooden floor that sits on top of the beams. And the Gemara points out, the like Twiggy, they're not actually arguing with Rabbi Yosef of Chanina, and Rabbi Shimon Lakish, and Vastini, in the name of Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Mauki Yasri, each one is going according to what they did in his local place. In Rabbi Yosef of Chanina's place, they would put up the beams that hold up the ceiling, and then on top of that, they would put a kind of mats woven from thin strips of wood, and then above that, they would pour the maziva, and where Rish Lakish lived, they would make a floor out of boards. The Oruch brings a different gusa over here, not Vastini, but Vitina, which means clay. So according to him, Rabbi Yossi Bachanina is saying the tikra includes all those things. Kinim usnoin vitina, it includes the woven mats as well as the clay that you use to hold it all together. And then Rabbi Shimon Lakish says instead that it means boards. Interesting point on there. In the Oruch, where you have the original Oruch, then you have the notes that were added to it by a Chacham in the 16th century named Rabbi Binyamin Musaf, 17th century, whatever, named Rabbi Binyamin Musafia. He comments over there, how could it possibly be that the, like Rashi is saying, the name Vastini? What kind of name is that? It sounds almost like Satan or something. So he says, the Oruch's Gersa must be correct. On the other hand, then there's Oruch HaSholem, and there's notes on the Oruch that were written in the 19th century and then are published together with it in a full edition, where he points out, you know what, you look at the Yerushalmi parallel to this, and the Yerushalmi quotes the same din in the name of Yusta, in the name of Rish Lakish, which is very similar to the name Vastini here in the Gemara. So yes, Rashi's Girsa may be more correct, that Vastini is the Gemara Bavli's version of the name Yusta, found in Yerushalmi, and yes, that it means, as Rashi says, Shem Chach. Okay. Anyway. So according to Rabbi Yossi, then the bottom floor, the one who lives on the bottom floor is responsible for providing those kinds of things, which are the foundation of the floor. And depending what they do in a particular place where you live, it's going to be either these kinds of mats and maybe with or without the clay to hold it in place, or boards according, or floorboards according to the shlosh. So the Gemara tells, there were one time two people who were living in a two-story house, like the kinds we're talking about over here. Now Rashi explains that unlike until now we've been talking about where it's a landlord and a tenant, here we're talking about there are two co-owners. One owns the bottom floor and one owns the top floor, so like a condo kind of. And Marsha adds the point, in fact, that if it was a landlord and a tenant, we're going to have the opinion, we're going to have the machloikas over here, who's responsible to fix the ceiling when it breaks and then when water is leaking downstairs. If it was a landlord and a tenant, there's no question that the landlord would be chayev to fix it. But because we're talking about two co-owners, then therefore we have a different, therefore it's a different issue. So if his maziva, the plaster, where that the plaster on the second floor broke, and the result was, he moshi maya iloi, the result was on the top floor, when a guy would wash his hands and spill the ground, and spill the water on the ground, as the umazi the tatoi, the water would drip downstairs and cause problems.
Wash their hands.
They would just wash their hands, apparently, on the bare floor, yeah.
They used to have a way that it wouldn't leak into them.
Usually, you would have the maziva would prevent that. Usually, I guess they would have like a drain, you'd have like a drainage channel on the floor or something to direct it to the edges, or so we're into a basin or something, yeah, I don't know. So Mima Sakin, so the question is, who's responsible to fix that, who's responsible to fix that broken plaster? Rav Chiya Ba'Aba Omar Ha'Elyon Masakin. Rav Chiya Ba'Aba says the upstairs neighbor is the one who's going to have to fix it. Rabbi Loi, Mishum Rav Chiya, Rav Yosi Omar Ha'Taftin Masakin. Rabbi Loi says in the name of Rav Chiya Bar Yosi that the bottom one that has to fix it. Now, further on, the Gemara is going to explain what exactly the scenario is over here. We're going to explain that at the end of the Sugya, right before the Mishnah, we're not talking about that. As the moment, we're not talking about that when he washes his hands, the water directly goes and drips downstairs, as though like there was a hole in the floor. We're talking about where the water collects, and after a while, it leaks through the floor. We're going to get to that point soon. But anyway, so the Gemara says, V'simen, the Yosef Horad Mitzrayma. A way to remember. So you have Rav Chiya Ba'Aba, and you have Rav Chiya Bar Yosi. Which one said which? A good way of remembering it is the pasuk, Yosef was brought down to Mitzrayim. That helps us remember. Yosef and Yosi are basically the same name, so it helps us remember that Rabbi Yosi is the one who says a taft, and the one downstairs is the one who has to fix that broken plaster. So the Gemara says, "Leimer Rabbi Ba'Aba v'Rabbi Loi v'plugted Rabbi Yosi v'Rabbanan Kamichli." Does that mean? Does it come out that Rabbi Ba'Aba and Rabbi Loi, in the name of Rabbi Bar Yosi, are actually arguing on the same machlokas as Rabbi Yosi and the Rabbanan in our Mishnah? About when we said again with a landlord and a tenant, and we said when part of the ceiling collapses and we have to rebuild it, who's responsible for what? Where the Tanakama made the downstairs the landlord responsible for everything, and Rabbi Yossi had said only the tikra, however we defined tikra before, as opposed to maziva, the upper floor, the second floor tenant is required to provide. So does it come to the same machlokas? Lamanda Amha Elyon Masakin. The opinion of Chiya Ba'Aba, who says that the upstairs neighbor has to fix the broken plaster. Would mean that he says that the mazik has to stay away from the nizik, make sure he doesn't cause damage. So now what happens is, what's the point of the maziva there is, on the face of it, to prevent exactly that, that when you wash your hands on the floor, when you mop your floor, whatever, that the water shouldn't go downstairs and cause damage, the maziva will hold it back. So therefore we would say, now in Bava Basra, you have in the second parak of Bava Basra, you have a number of related dinim. You can have, for example, which the Gemara is going to now bring one of them in a second, you can have a case where I have something on my property, it's very close to something on your side of the property, property line, and mine is going to cause damage to yours. The question is, or the fundamental question is, who's responsible to remove themselves? Do we say, I'm the mazik, therefore I have to make sure that my potential hazard is as far away as possible? Or sometimes we say, no, listen, this is my property. I have the right to do with it to a certain extent what I want in it. If it's causing you a hazard, you remove the thing that's causing you that's being caused, that to which, for which the damage is being caused. So should we say then that Rabbi Abba Abba, who says the upstairs neighbor, he's the one pouring water on the floor, so he would have to fix the plaster on the theory that the mazik has to remove himself from the nizik, so therefore he's the one who would have to fix the plaster. Meanwhile, in the Mishnah, the reason why the downstairs neighbor, according to Rabbi Yossi, has to supply the tikra, the mats or the boards or whatever that make up the floor, is because there we were talking about a landlord and a tenant. Umanda Omatachtin Masakin. Meanwhile, Rabbi Ila, in the name of Rabbi Loi, would say, he says, Atachtin Masakin Kasavar, Al Nizik Lahazak Azatma. He would say that the Nizik is responsible to remove himself. You don't want that water is going to be leaking from upstairs and into your house, then you fix it to prevent that from happening.
We have been where someone who has a tannery or flax.
So those are dinim all discussed in the second parak of Bava Basra. So yeah. So sometimes.
It's similar.
Yeah. So you have many such dinim. So then, but we're going to discuss one of them now. Yeah. So the Gemara says, "V'tisvara Rav Yosi v'Rabbanan le'inin nezakin pligi." Wait, are you thinking that Rav Yosi and Rabbanan in our Mishnah, that their fundamental machlokas is about a matter of nezakin? It's a matter of that we're asking who has to put up the plaster to prevent water from upstairs leaking downstairs? No, can't be. We actually find Rav Yosi and the Chachamim addressing this point, but saying exactly the other way around. The Tanan, wow. We learn in a Mishnah in Bava Basra, in that second parak of Bava Basra, where we have many of these dinim. If you want to plant a tree near somebody else's pit, so Reuven has a water pit in his cistern, yeah, in his property. You want to plant a tree near the edge of your property, close to his pit. The problem is the roots over the years are going to grow into the ground, and they're going to undermine the pit. So you have to keep it far away. Esther v'chomesh amah, 25 amas, or v'chodav v'shikma chamishim amah. If you're planting a carob tree or a shikma tree, which is called a sycamore in English, it's a tree that we've learned about it earlier in the Masechta. It's a tree that over the years it grows a very thick trunk and branches, and you can use them for beams. We're going to talk about it a little bit on Amud Beis. It also produces a fruit, but it's kind of an inferior quality of fruit, so people don't usually grow it for the fruit. But anyway, those a carob tree or a shikma tree have roots that extend much further, so chamishim amah, you have to keep them 50 amas away. And that applies bein milamayla, whether the pit is higher than the tree, meaning, in other words, let's say, so Reuven's property with the cistern in it is higher on higher ground, and the tree is on lower ground. So the problem still is the roots are going to go under the foundation of the cistern. Bein minatzad, or whether it's one next to the other, that they're both at the same height, because then it's gonna destroy the walls of the cistern. However, the Mishnah continues there. Im habur kodam, if the pit was there first, if Reuven's pit was there before Shimon comes to plant his tree, koitzitz, then Shimon has to chop down his tree, the noisen loidamim, and the one who owns the cistern has to pay him for that. So Rashi explains there in Bava Basra, the point is, because when Reuven planted the tree, he was entitled to it, wasn't his property. Over the years, the roots have grown, and now they're in danger of damaging the burr. Therefore, at this point, Shimon can tell him, look, the roots of your tree are damaging my burr. You have to chop it down. But nevertheless, since he planted it originally, Bereshus, then therefore he's entitled to compensation for it. Actually, Tosfos there learns differently. Even if he planted it be'isser, he has to chop down his tree. It's a tree. It's a big hefsid, so therefore the Chachamim say that the other guy doesn't have to compensate him for it. So according to Rashi, it's doubtful when he planted it, the heter, and then over the years, the roots have grown, and according to Tosfos, even if he planted the iser. Anyway, if the tree was there first, if Shimon's tree was there first, lo yokets, he's not obligated to chop it down. Because then he can say, my tree was here, so my tree was here first. It's your fault for putting a cistern in that place where eventually the roots could damn you. Sofik zekodim. What if it's a sofik which one came first? Lo yokuts. He's not obligated to cut it down because I'm motzi mechavel avaraya. Reb Yossi Omer, and Reb Yossi disagrees and says, Apa pisha abur kademis le'ilon, even if a pit was there first and then he planted the tree afterwards, lo yokuts, he's not obligated to chop it down, shezech chofa b'sech shaloi v'zenatea b'sech shaloi, because each one is entitled to use his property as he sees fit. Here the Tanakhama was saying that Shimon is required to keep his tree X number of amos away from the pit. Reb Yossi says he doesn't have to. He can plant it close to the edge. Over the years, the roots are going to grow and damage the pit. Not my problem. It's my property. I have the right within certain limits to do what I want in my property. As the Gemara is going to point out soon, it's different when there's a direct hezek, but here we're talking about where the hezek develops only over a period of years and years. So, Alma Rav Yossi Sava Ala Nizek Lahafek Kazatzlai. Therefore, Rav Yossi would take the view, look, I'm acting within my reshus, which I have every right to do. You're the Nizek. You, Reuven, your pit is getting undermined by the roots of my tree. It's not really my problem. If you have a problem with it, move your pit, redig your pit someplace else. So, Fakir, Rav Yossi in our Mishnah would have to hold the same way then. He would say that, if it's just a matter of the Maziva in our Mishnah, if the reason is to prevent water from leaking downstairs, then we would say, then Rav Yossi would say that the downstairs neighbor should be the one supplying the plaster so that he doesn't get leaked on. Whereas the Chachamim in that Mishnah hold that the Mazik has to remove himself and therefore he can't have his tree over there. And so it would be the opposite of our Mishnah. You know, if they were following that Svara, then in our Mishnah, the Chachamim should be the one saying that the upstairs neighbor has to supply the plaster for the floor between the first and the second floors, and Rav Yossi would be saying that the downstairs, that the landlord has to provide all of it. So it can't be that that's the meaning of the machlokas. So therefore we can't say that, no, we can't say that Rav Chiya bar Abba versus Rav Eloi in the name of Rav Chiya bar Yossi, when they're arguing about, again, when the water was leaking downstairs, who has to fix the plaster, it's not the same machlokas as in our Mishnah. If you want to say that they're machloek pligi, if you want to say that they're arguing on a machloek of tanoim, then fine, you could say the plug to the Rabbi Yosef Rabban and Dehasim. Fine, the machloek would be they're arguing on the same point as Rabbi Yosef and the Chachamim do in that Mishnah in Bava Basra. Namely, that Rabbi Ba'aba would hold that the upper floor, the second floor guy, has to fix the plaster. That would be like the Chachamim over there, Al-Mazik Ba'avah Kazatzvay. And Rabbi Yossi would say the downstairs neighbor has to do that, which would be like Rabbi Yossi, who says that if your pit is being undermined by my tree, then you move your pit. I'm not obligated to cut down my tree. What about on Mishnah? Well, what about what's going on with the machloekas of Rav Yossi and the Chachamim in our Mishnah, where again their svaras seem to be the reverse of how they have it in Bava Basra? The answer is what we're talking about over here. It's not a matter of water leaking downstairs. It's a matter of that the floorboards are shaky. So the chozik tikra kamisli. So the argument is, What is the purpose of the maziva? We're talking about over here, the ceiling needs to be strengthened. So here, in other words, Rashi explains, till now we were talking about where it's the downstairs neighbor who's complaining. He's saying, your water is leaking on me. No, in our Mishnah, we're not talking about there's no problem of water leaking. The problem is on the contrary. The upper floor, the second floor guy is saying the floor is unstable. The floorboards are jiggling when I walk. So therefore they need to be strengthened and kept in place. So now, Rabbanan Sabi Mazivah Zuki Tikru, the Chum hold, the purpose of the Mazivah is to hold the floorboards in place. Well, that's the responsibility of the downstairs guy. Well, then that's the downstairs neighbor who's responsible for that. Because again, just like in the Mishnah, in the earlier part of the Mishnah, we had when part of the upstairs floor collapsed or sagged, where he's responsible to fix it, and if not, then we said the upstairs guy is even allowed to come and live downstairs. Well, by the same token, if the floorboards are shaky, then it's his responsibility as a landlord to fix it. Rabbi Yossi Sava, Rabbi Yossi says no. For Maziva Ashvuye Gumsu, Rabbi Yossi says that the purpose of the Maziva is basically just in order to make a smooth floor. If it's just a matter of holding the floorboards in place, you could just nail them down better, put in pegs or nails or whatever. The purpose of the Maziva, Rabbi Yossi says, is to create a nice smooth floor for the second floor guy. Well then, Ashvuye Gumus Ala Elyim Ashvuye. Well, that kind of Ashvuye Gumus Ala Elyim Ashvuye. Well, that kind of thing is the responsibility of the upstairs guy, because you can live in a house that has a rough floor. So therefore, in our Mishnah, it's not a matter of mazik and a nizik. It's a matter of what's needed in order to strengthen the floor, and therefore, so the landlord is responsible for the whole thing. And Rabbi Yossi says no, because the maziva is not really necessary to make the place livable. It's more in order that it should be nice. So in fact, if there was a matter of hezek, then yes, Rabbi Yossi, in order to be consistent with his opinion in Bava Basra, would have to say that the downstairs neighbor would have to fix the plaster, because I'm a nizik lahavrikas atzmai. And the chum would give a different reason, actually. So it comes out, actually, Marsha points out, if there's water damage going on over here, then both the chumim and Rabbi Yossi would hold the downstairs neighbor has to fix it, but for different reasons. The chum would say, anyway, the downstairs, the landlord is responsible for the maziva. And Rabbi Yossi would say that the downstairs neighbor has to fix it for a different reason. So the Gemara says, Amy. Now, let's go back. Let's revisit, though, that machlokas of Rabbi Loi and Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba about, we're saying, when the water is dripping downstairs. So is that so that Rabbi Loi is going to say, and Rabbi Yossi is going to say, that the upstairs neighbor doesn't have to fix the floor to prevent the water from leaking downstairs? Rav Ashi says, when I was in the yeshiva of Rav Kahana, when we Talmidim were in the yeshiva of Rav Kahana, Havamrin, and we used to say, Modi Rav Yossi begiri delay. Rav Yossi agrees when it's his arrows that are causing damage, meaning that there's a few different opinions among Rishonim what exactly is considered divi, and we'll get to that in a second, but Rabbi Yossi, it's one thing Rabbi Yossi is talking about over there in Bava Basra, when you planted a tree and years pass and eventually the roots go far enough to damage the bird. But when you have imagine a person is standing in this property, giri means arrows. Imagine a person is standing over his side of the property line and shooting arrows and saying it's not my problem that causes damage in your property. Yeah, Rabbi Yossi is going to agree that you can't do that. So here, if we're talking about where the water is leaking downstairs, wouldn't it be directly giri delay? Now, there are several opinions of Rishonim, what exactly is needed for it to be defined as giri delay. Rashi over here explains exactly that. It means like as if you're shooting arrows, meaning, in other words, in effect, So Rashi explains any damage that comes directly from the mazik. So like this, for example, he's spilling water and it's directly leaking downstairs. So that would be considered giri. Then you have the Rinagash explains that the giri is when you put the thing that causes hezek there and immediately it causes hezek. As opposed to if you put it there, but there's a delay so everybody agrees the tree is not giri. It's clear from the Gemara over here. According to Rashi, it wouldn't be giri because it didn't come directly from you, the mazik. It comes from the roots over the years. According to the Rimi Gash, the vote is that because the roots are growing only over the years. But if there's a delay from when you put it there and then the damage, then it's not considered giri. Then you have the Ramban explains that it comes directly from the location where the thing is placed. Anything that causes damage from where it's located, whether it's immediately or whether later on, as opposed to, therefore, the tree is not giving delay because it's not the tree itself. It's not causing damage from where it's planted. The roots are spreading out over the years. And then you have the Rabbeinu Yonah, who actually combines two of these opinions and says it has to be immediately and it has to be from the location. So basically combining the opinions of the Rimi Gash and the Ramban. Now, the halacha in Shulchan Aruch is brought like the Rimi Gash. So the definition of giri would be any time that you put something there and it immediately causes damage as soon as it's placed there, as opposed to if it's a delay, then it's not giri, even though you placed it there. Anyway, so Rav Yossi agrees by giri delay, and here also on the face of it then, you're talking about that he's pouring water upstairs and it immediately drips downstairs. So according to any of these various definitions of the Rishonim, it would be considered giri. So shouldn't we require him to fix the plaster to prevent that? So how can we say that there's an argument whether we should have to fix? And the answer is the paski maya v'hodr nafs. What happens is over here, the water is getting interrupted. It doesn't leak downstairs right away. First, it gets absorbed into the ceiling, and then, so not necessarily absorbed into the ceiling. So again, Rashi, who says that the point is that it's where he's doing it himself, says that we're talking about, for example, that the water is poured in one place and then it leaks someplace else. So it's running along the floor, it's running through that channel or something, and then it ends up leaking downstairs in a different place. So therefore, it wouldn't be considered giri. And again, according to the various Rishonim, we would be talking about different other possibilities of how it would be, how it wouldn't be considered giri. For example, that it gets absorbed into the water, as the Torah actually brings, that it means the water gets absorbed and then eventually it leaks into the apartment downstairs. So therefore, it's not giri. And therefore, so Rav Yossi would say, alam nizik v'hazak kasatzma, you don't want the leak into your apartment, then you have to go fix the maziva. But if it had fallen directly, then yes, Rav Yossi would agree that their upstairs neighbor has to fix it, because he's the one causing the hazard. So, in fact, Rashi adds the point, what if there was no maziva at all? What if there was no plaster at all? And as soon as he pours it, then it goes downstairs, and yes, of course, he would be hired to fix it. Okay. Mishnah says, Habayis v'haliyah shal shnayim shenafu. You have a house, you have a ground floor and a second floor that belong to two people, and the house collapsed, like in the first Mishnah. Omer bala aliyah la bala bayis livnos. Now, suppose that the owner of the second floor says that we should rebuild it. We want to be able to each live in our respective places over there. So you need to build your ground floor so that I can build my second floor above. So there is a bit of discussion over here. We're talking about over here about partners. Each one owns a different floor of the house. So therefore, he's saying that, look, you know, you have to build your ground floor because until you do, I can't build my second. But who ain't your rights to live in this? Meanwhile, the ground floor owner doesn't want to build it. So then, Hare Balel Haliya Bones Habayis, what happens then is the one who owns the upstairs floor rebuilds the ground floor out of his pocket, the Durba Soicha, and he lives there, Adjiyitin Loyasit Yosef, until the Bala Bias is going to pay him for his expenses. Then at that point, he'll say, well, now, until now, I was holding on to the house because I have the right to live at this address. So now, since you weren't willing to build it, then I built the ground floor, and now, once you're willing to pay me for my expenses, then I'll leave and then I'll start building my second floor. Now that Ramban asks, why do we go through such a rigmarole? Why don't we just say, look, you know, you downstairs neighbor have a responsibility to build, so Basin is going to force you to build like any other case. So the Ramban explains that we're talking about, based on Yerushalmi, that we're talking about over here, where the ground floor owner has actually gone off to Medina Sayyam. So therefore, you can't force him. So therefore, the only thing we can do is do something like this, where you're going to build the ground floor and live there. And then the Ran learns differently. The Ran brings from the Rashba that no, we could be kosher for him, but what we're talking about over here, that look, the house is meshubad to it. It's not, there's no real shibud on the Balabais himself, just on the house. And it's not like we say by a loan, for example, we say that Beis Din can compel him to pay for one thing because Shalotinil Delos Bifne Loivin, we don't want to discourage people from lending others money. Here you don't have that consideration. So therefore, it's not even a matter of there is a shibud on the house, but not to the extent where we could necessarily force the downstairs neighbor to rebuild the house. However, the upstairs neighbor can take matters into his hand and build it and continue to live there and tell the other guy, you have no right to live here until you pay me for the expenses that I laid out in building what's now going to be your house, and then I'll leave and then I'll start building my house, my apartment on top of yours. Very interesting thing, by the way, there's a sikha from Tovshin Chavvav where they ever quoted a mimer that may be from the Tzemach mimer that had been found and published not long before that might be from the Tzemach Tzedek, might not, where you have the Tzemach Tzedek explained it in a deeper vein. The upstairs and the downstairs over here, we're talking about is referring to your Shalayim Shalmata and your Shalayim Shalmaila. What does your Shalayim represent? Yira Shalim, the complete Yira that a Yid has to have for Hashem. So what happens is, in other words, so now you have, there's a bias in an Aliyah that have been destroyed. Now what's supposed to be is that we, the downstairs neighbor, and Hashem being the upstairs neighbor, so to speak, we're supposed to pay the yitzias, we're supposed to pay the expenses by redo our avoida properly, and then that way we rebuild the ground floor, the Yerushalayim Shalmata, and then Hashem can rebuild and live and dwell in the Yerushalayim Shalmaila. Meanwhile, there comes a point where we don't want to put in the effort to do tshuva and to do avoid. So what we're saying over here is Hashem can take the view. You know what? Then fine. I'll rebuild your Shalayim on my own. I will unilaterally. So you have now. There's Be'ita, as we know, with Mashiach, there's Be'ita and there's Achishem. If we're zoicha to the geula, so what happens is here, the upstairs neighbor is saying to the downstairs neighbor, rebuild, meaning Hashem is giving us hirhurei tshuva and telling us we have to rebuild the house, we have to rebuild Yerushalayim Shalmata. So now it depends. You have Be'ita and you have Achishena. You have Be'ita, where Mashiach is going to come at a certain defined time that Hashem knows whether we deserve it or not, and then there's Achishena, where we're zoicha, and Mashiach will come early. So if we're in a level of Achishena, then good, everything works normally. We build the house, Hashem builds the Aliyah, and everything's good. If not, though, then what happens is, eventually there comes a time, Hashem decides, it's time for Mashiach to come, whether you Jews are doing your job or not. Therefore, Hashem says, like in the case of the Mishnah over here, fine, I'm going to build the house unilaterally, but I'm staying here. I'm not admitting you until you pay the yitzias, meaning until you start developing a sense of yira shalim, of your shalim. So we say, in other words, that, in effect, what it means is that Hashem is saying, sure, Mashiach has come, but you don't really feel the full effect of it. You don't realize you're not living in a Mashiachic way. So you feel as though you're still excluded from your shalim, from yira shalim. And he brings in this connection, Ad Shir Shalom Leitz Yosef, until at least, maybe now, after the fact, after Mashiach has come, maybe, we finally do tshuva. So then at least, now we pay the Yitzias, after the fact, and now Hashem says, good, now you can enter the Yerushalayim Shalmata, the physical one and the spiritual one, and now I can rebuild the Yerushalayim Shalmaila. And he mentions in this connection, you have a medrash on the pasuk, Bodi Yerushalayim Hashem, Nidche Yisrael Yechanes. Hashem rebuilds Yerushalayim, and he gathers in the dispersed of the Jewish people. The Medrash says on it, even though, Boni Yerushalayim Hashem, nevertheless, Nidche Yisrael Yechanes. What do you mean, even though, and nevertheless? Means exactly this kind of thing. Even though Hashem is building Yerushalayim unilaterally, and the Jewish people are not putting in their effort, nevertheless, Hashem goes, L'fnim Meshuras Hadin, and gathers the Jewish people together out of Golos and brings them there anyway. So that's the deeper explanation of our Mishnah. Continues the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda says that's a problem if you're going to do like that. You're telling me again that the second floor owner is going to rebuild the ground floor and live there until the other guy pays him for his expenses. The problem is, after Zed Durba Search Shochadele, it comes out that he's living in somebody else's property, and therefore it's Sarach Lahalas Leischar, and he would have to be paying him rent. It's true it's Zelech Choser, but nevertheless, without building it, he wouldn't have a place to live. Rav Yehuda holds. Rashi says, Zenen of Azalei Choser is Chayev, so he has to pay him rent. If not, then Rashi says it would be Ribis. Now, Tosfos says, what ribis? There's no borrowing and lending money over here. So Tosfos says, it's just strictly because of Zenan of Zel Chosser and the Gemara, and Rabbi Yehuda is going to point out that there's actually a Chosser over here. So Ella, because the Gemara is going to say that when he's living over there, the fact is the walls are getting blackened from the use of the house. So Ella, Rabbi Yehuda says, rather the way you have to do it, Baal Aliyah, Bones Abayis, Ve'es Aliyah. What happens then is the second floor owner builds both stories, including the second story, Makares Aliyah, including all the way up to, including putting a roof on the second floor, the Yoshev Abayis. Now, in other words, so in the Tanakama scenario, in other words, when he's living downstairs, there's no upstairs yet. Now, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, no, build both the downstairs and the upstairs. Now, yes, you're entitled to live in the downstairs, until he pays for his expenses. That way, it's not Zen Nana. That way, it's not Zen of Zeloi Choser. Now, it's not Zen Nana. Because either way, he'd have a place to live. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda said, that gets us around the problem of him having to pay rent. So we have to understand the machloikas of Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Yochanan, b'shloisha mekomes shon alon Rabbi Yehuda." There are three places in Shas where Rabbi Yehuda teaches us the concept. Also, lo adam shiyahonim imom and chaveri, a person is not allowed to have hana from somebody else's money unless he gave him from somebody else's possessions, unless he gave him matana to do it, unless it's with the other guy's das and he approves of it. Because in other words, in our Mishnah, we're saying Rabbi Yehuda is saying that as long as the second floor is not built, then the second floor owner has no right to live in the ground floor without the other guy's permission. So Chodah Hoditnan, one of them was an our Mishnah. The reason is because again, because of this consideration. If he builds the house and lives there without paying rent, then it would be a form of gezel. So therefore Rabbi Yehuda argues you have to pay rent, and in order to get around that, you have to have this business where he builds the second floor first. Tosfos discusses in the detail behind it. It means, in other words, that even though you would think that first of all it's zen nan of a zelot choser, nevertheless the Chacham say that you shouldn't do it shaloi midaita. And then you have the other examples as well where Rabbi Yehuda is saying a similar kind of thing. So hoda hoditznan. One of them is what we learned in our Mishnah. Idach mahi. What's the second one? The tznan. We learn in a Mishnah. In Bava Basra, Misha Pora Mikfas Choyvoy, a person paid off part of his debt. I skipped a few lines. Idoch Mahi, the Tanan, Hanosin Tsema Latsaba Latsboyalai Odom, a person gives wool to a dyer to dye it black for him, Latsavay Shocher, and the other guy ended up dyeing it black. Shocher Latsavay Odom, or the other way around, it was supposed to be black and he dyed it red. Rameo Ominosin Ledmate Samro, Rameo says he just gives him the value of his wool because Rameo holds that the dyer acquired the wool with the shinri, so therefore, so in effect, he's considered a gazlon who acquired the shinri, so he only has to pay the guy the value of his wool. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says that no, again, this is a problem of nenim and mom and chaberim, because after all, he's having hana from the fact that this guy brought him wool and now he's using it. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, "Ima shvach yosra loitzah." If the improvement in the value of the wool is greater than the expenses, when you consider the expenses of the dye and the wood to fire up the vat, and the amount of time that he would be paid, the money that he would be paid for his time and his effort and everything. So if the shvach is greater than the hitzah, noisam loisaitzia, then the owner of the wool gives him only the expenses. Rather than otherwise, we would have given him a larger amount. We might say, "Ala shvach." And if the expenses are greater than the shvach, no sin less a shvach, then he gives him the shvach. Then he gives him the value of the improvement. Tosfos refers over here to something that they explained in Bava Kamma, where they explained based on Yerushalmi, it's not strictly speaking that we only consider the value of the expenses and the value of the shvach. We actually, we figure out like this. Tosfos had brought over there. Imagine, for example, the wool was worth 5 mana. The dye was worth another 5. The pay that you would usually pay the guy would be 10. Now, so you want it dyed one color, and the idea is if it was dyed that color, it would be worth 25 altogether. So you would have, you've been giving out an expense of 20, and you stand to make a profit of 5. Now, in the end, he does another color, and therefore, so you can say, listen, I shouldn't have to lose my 5 mona of profit, so you're going to have to lose what's going to be deducted from your profit. So in other words, what we figure is the shvach, in other words, counts as the value of the raw materials plus the amount that the owner expected to make as a profit, which is 5 in this case, because he would have paid 20 for something which is worth 25. The yitzia, meanwhile, would be the amount that he would have paid the dayo, which is 10. So it depends then if the yitzia is seir al shvach. Let's say the shvach was only 4 mana. So let's say after everything is done, it's worth 19. Then you give him only 4. You don't have to give him anything. You give him 4, which is what's 19 minus 15 is 4. And you don't have to give him any more than that. If the shvach is greater than the yitzia, meaning, for example, let's say now the wool is worth 27, then you only have to give him 10, then like the original thing, no more than that. So that's how Tosfos learns based on the Yerushalmi what yitzia and shvach is respectively. Anyway, the point is, according to Rashi over here, it's just a matter of as if you had paid him the full amount as a kabbal, and it would be more, and now instead you're paying him less. The point is, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, you can't just say that the dayo should keep the wool, because that would be nanim mamon and chaver. The idach ma'i, what's the third case where Rabbi Yehuda says such a thing? You have a ditnan, we learn in a mishnah in Bava Basra. Misha pora miktas chayvoi, a person paid off part of his debt, the hishlish shtaroi, and instead, he deposited the shtar with a third party. So what happens is the loiva is concerned that the malva is going to try to collect the entire debt. So he says, now that I've paid off part of the debt, I don't want to leave the shtar in the hand of the malva, because the malva may try to collect the whole thing again. We could conceivably just write on the shtar that part of it is paid off, but for whatever reason, they don't want to do that. The malva might say, for whatever reason, he doesn't want to do that. So instead, they put the shtar with a third party, but omaloi, and the loiva says to this shulish, im einani noisin lachomi kanran zman ploini, if I don't pay you back, meaning I'm going to pay you, and then in turn you're going to pay the malva, if I don't give you the money, from now and between now and such a date, 10 loy shtore, then give the malva back his shtar, and I'll take my chances with that he's going to try to collect the whole debt again. So should he do that? He gives man boy no son. If the time came and he didn't actually pay off, Rabbi Yossi says, fine, you follow what the guy said. Give it to the malva. Rabbi Yehuda says you shouldn't, because then the malva may end up collecting with it again. So again, he's having hana from somebody else's mammon in a way that he shouldn't. So that would be the third case then. So that would be the third case where Rabbi Yehuda says that also lahonis mi mamon chaveri without his permission. But the Gemara says amai. Why do we have to say that Rabbi Yehuda actually holds also lahonis mi mamon chaveri? You can find a specific reason. Here you're trying to find one overarching reason that explains all these three dinim. Maybe not. Maybe each one of them is based on a different consideration. Dilma ad kan like ha'omer of Yehuda ha'cha. You know why Rabbi Yehuda says over here that you can't live in the ground floor when the second floor is not built yet? Not because you're not allowed to have a hanah from somebody else's mammon without his permission, but because there is an actual harm. The fact is, when you're living in the house, you're causing the walls to be blackened over time by using the house. So there is actually, so here you're going to say, eventually the owner of the house is eventually the owner of the ground floor is going to pay you for your expenses, but meanwhile during that time you've been damaging what's going to become his house because you blacken the walls. So therefore Rabbi Yehuda is saying it's not a matter of zen nan of a zel loy chaser. It's zen nan of a zel chaser. You're gaining by living in the house and you're causing a loss to the other guy by blackening his walls. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says you can't do that. As opposed to once the second floor is built, then we say it's zeh loy nana, because then he's not really gaining from living downstairs, because then he could go to begin with and live upstairs. So not necessarily is Rabbi Yehuda's din in our Mishnah based on the concept of zeh nana, the zeh loy foster, and saying that's awesome. Inami. And again, you could say, in the case of the wool, let's boy alay odim mitzavah shomer, when he was supposed to dye it red and he dyed it black, the reason might be mishum dechamashane, because he changed from what he was supposed to do, the hotnan, and indeed we learn earlier in our Masechta, called mashane yodelatachtona, whoever changed from the terms that they had agreed had the lower hand. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says we're going to penalize him, and we're going to give him the lesser of the yitzir or the shvach of the case, maybe. And As far as the third case involving the partial payment of the debt and the shalish and all that, Nami, you could say the reason why. Rabbi Yehuda says you don't give the shtar back to the malva because havi asnachta. It's only an asnachta because it's not a sincere commitment. He was sure that he's going to pay off the whole thing, as we've learned a few times in the Masechta about the concept of asnachta and how we define it exactly. It's based on that it wasn't a serious commitment because he fully expected to pay off the debt. And then the various considerations, what exactly makes it an asmachta. The shamin and leil of Yehuda do'amal loikoni. And we find that Yehuda clearly says that asmachta is not koine. So that would be why you don't return the shtar. So it doesn't show that there's one reason that explains all these three dinim. So therefore, maybe Rabbi Yehuda would hold Zenen of Zalei Choser is in fact Potter, and the result of that would be, as we learned in Baba Kama, and as we learned earlier in our Masechta, actually, that if you're living in somebody else's Choser, where the Choser is not normally rented out, so therefore the other guy is not losing from not getting potential tenants, and and you yourself have another place to live, so it's Zen Loinen, because you don't need that particular place to live, maybe you're not required to pay rent even according to Rabbi Yehuda. Now, the Gemara continues. Now, so we said that eventually the idea is that both the ground floor and the second floor are going to be rebuilt. So, Omer of Acha Ba'adam, Shmei De'ula, Tachten Abolishanes V'Gvil. Suppose that previously the bottom floor was built, the bottom story of the house was built previously with some other, let's say they were built with gozis, which are hewn quarried stones that are squared off. And now instead he wants to build with gvil, which are unhewn stones. We're going to learn at the beginning of Bava Basra, the first Mishnah of Bava Basra mentions the four common building materials that they used in those days. You had gvil, which is unhewn rough stones, where the edges of them are not smoothed off, so they stick out. You have gozis, which is hewn stones. You had kfisin, which are half bricks, where they would put a vertical row of half bricks and then some plaster or whatever between them, and then another row of half bricks, and the total width was four tvachim. And then you had where they would build with just bricks, which was three tvachim. So the Mishnah mentions over there, you have six tvachim for gvil, five for gozis, four for kfisin, and three for levain. So now, If beforehand his downstairs apartment was built with gozis stones, and now instead he wants to rebuild with gvil, shomenlo, then we can listen to him, and he can do that because it's going to make the place stronger. And the idea is we want the ground floor to be at least as strong as it was before. Given that collapse, we don't want to build it any weaker. So if he wants to build it stronger, shremen loy, then we listen. The gozis ain't shremen loy. But if he wants to go from gvil to gozis, we don't listen to him because gvil is wider and therefore stronger. The kfisin shremen loy, similarly, if he wants to switch from plain bricks to kfisin, which are, again, you have a half brick, a layer of plaster, and then another half brick, which makes a thicker wall, shremen loy, then we can listen to him and he can do that. The levanim, but if he wants to change from kfisin to levanim, ain't shremen loy, we don't listen to him because he's making the wall weaker, and therefore the second floor owner can say that's making it a greater likelihood that my second floor, which is on top of yours, is eventually going to collapse again. If he wants to say that the ceiling of his first floor, which is going to be the floor of the second floor, is going to be ba'arozim, he wants to change and use cedar, shomen loy, we listen to him, b'shikmin, but if he wants to change to shikma wood, which is weaker, ain shomen loy, we don't listen to him. L'mayit b'chalonis, if he wants to have fewer windows, which therefore makes the wall stronger, shomen loy, then we listen to him. L'hayavis b'chalonis, if he wants to make bigger or more windows, ain shomen loy, then we don't listen to him. Meaning, when we say ain shomen loy, in all these cases, means the upper floor owner has the right to prevent him from making such alterations, because he's going to say it's going to weaken the wall, and over the years, it's more likely that it's going to collapse. Similarly, like bia ain shomen loy, if the first floor owner wants to make his place taller, then ain't shomen loy. We don't listen to him because that'll make it less sturdy. Lamayit, if he wants to make it shorter, shomen loy, then we listen to him. On the other hand, Elyon Shabal Shanis, now when it comes to the second floor building, it's the other way around. If he wants to change the gozis and he wants to build the gozis where there was gvil before, Shomin Lo, then we can listen to him because he, because now he's making the wall, now he's making the wall less, so on the second floor, there's no concern of the sturdiness of the wall. On the contrary, we want to have that the walls of the second floor are not going to be so heavy so that they could then end up damaging the walls below them and eventually causing them to sink into the ground or whatever. So if he wants to change to Gozis from real Shomin Lo, then we listen to him because he's making them lighter in weight. The Gozis in Shomin Lo, but if the Gvil in Shomin Lo, but if he wants to change it to Gvil, then we don't listen to him because Gvil is heavier and therefore he's putting more burden on the walls of the downstairs apartment. The Kfisin in Shomin Lo, but the Vein for Shomin Lo, similarly, if he wants to change from regular bricks to Kfisin, no good because he's making the wall heavier, but if he wants to change to Levanium, which is lighter, then we listen to him. Bar Rosim in Shomin Lo, if he wants that his ceiling should be made of cedar boards, which are stronger, but they're also heavier, in Shomin Lo, we don't listen to him because again, he's putting more weight on the bottom, on the walls of the bottom one. But Shikma Shomin Lo, if he wants to change to Shikma beams, then we accept that, and he can do that because he's making it lighter. Like Bia in Shomin Lo, if he wants to, like Rabbis Bachalonis Shomin Lo, if he wants to have more windows or bigger windows, then we listen to him, because he's making the wall lighter. But Lamai Bachalonis in Shomin Lo, if he wants fewer windows, we don't listen to him. Like Bia in Shomin Lo, if he wants to make it taller, we don't listen, because that's going to make it heavier. Lamai Shomin Lo. And if he wants to make it shorter, then we do listen to him. So in other words, the basic rule is, with the ground floor, any change that he wants to make that makes the walls stronger and more able to bear the load of the second floor, then good. Anything that makes them weaker, no. And with the second floor owner, it's the other way around. The Rosh points out, actually, this is all where there's a... It also depends on Minhag HaMedina. It depends. If Minhag HaMedina is that you're going to use a certain kind of construction, then he's allowed to do it even if it's different than it was before. The Meiri disagrees with that and says that no, it does have to really be exactly the way it was before or better, as the case may be. Furthermore, also the Rosh explains that all this is talking about where they bought it as is, or they yauchen it from their father as is. Now they want to rebuild. But let's say, for example, they bought a ruined building, and each one builds the ground floor, the other the second floor. So now, eventually, it collapsed, and they want to change. Then he can do whatever he wants. We don't say because to begin with you built a certain way, now you're limited to that way. That would be different. It's one thing when they got the house as is, says the Rosh. Okay. Now the question is, what would happen if neither one of them has the ability to rebuild it? Neither one of them can afford to rebuild it. So now the Balabayas, Rashi explains, wants to sell the land. So now the question is, does the Baal Haliyah own any part of the land or not? That's according to Rashi. Tosfos says that no, of course he can't. It's mishubed to the other guy. The other guy has the right to build his aliyah. Okay, he doesn't have the money for it. Doesn't mean that you can just go sell it out from underneath me. Rather, Tosfos explains we're talking about the Balabayas, the ground floor owner wants to plant. He says, you know what? We don't have the money to build, so let's at least not leave this land empty. Let's go plant something. So now the Baal Aliyah says, well, wait, maybe I have a share in the land also, and I should be entitled to a certain percentage of it to plant as well. So what do we say then? So Tanya, so within a brisa, ein loy lozev, ein loy loy lozev, loy lozev, ein loy baal aliyah b'kavka klum. And brisa says that in that case the baal aliyah doesn't own anything. This is in parenthesis, and in fact there's a machlokas rishonim whether we have that in here or not. The Rosh has it. The Rosh takes that out. The Rif has it. So the Rif holds that. The Rif mentions that din. However, the Rosh doesn't even bring it.
So wait.
Tanya Rav Nosson, I remember, but we learn in a Braisa, Rav Nosson says, Tachten Noto Shnei Chalokim, the bottom floor owner gets 2/3 of the land, Ve'oyen Shlish, and the upper floor one gets 1/3. So according to Rashi, if they're selling it, and according to Tosfos, if they're planting it, so he'd be entitled to 1/3, to 1/3 of the proceeds. Then the Braisa continues, Acherim Oimrim, Acherim Oimrim, Acherim, which usually means the mayor says, Takta Noto Shloish HaLokim, Ve'oyen Noto Revia. The downstairs neighbor gets 3/4, and the upstairs neighbor gets 1. So, Omer Rabban, Nekotir of Nosin B'yodah. Rava says you can hold what Rav Nosson is holding in your hand, meaning that's the halacha, the dayanahu, because Rav Nosson was a dayan. We learn at the end of Hodias that he was the Avestin in the time where Rav Shimon Amir was a Nasi, where it was a Nasi, Rav Nosson was the Avestin. So he's a dayan. He regularly deals with Dine Mominus, the Nochus, the Unka, the Dinah. So he gets down into the depth of the din. He figures out the rationale behind the din. Kasava, he figures, Kama mafsid aliyah bias tilsa. When you have a second floor, how much does it shorten the lifespan of the house on average by 1/3? Meaning, if you have a house that it was only a ground floor and without a second floor on it, it might have lasted 100 years. Now, because it's weighed down by the second floor, then it lasts only 66 years. So its lifespan is reduced by 1/3. Therefore, hilchah isklay tilta. Therefore, it comes out. Therefore it comes out that the upstairs owner is entitled to 1/3 to 1/3 of the value of the property, and therefore he's entitled to do that to get 1/3 of that. Yeah. Okay. Everyone?
Is that it? We're almost finished.
We are indeed almost finished.